an advice request for EA20-158166DA, the Southwest Park Apartments. So this is a design advice request. It is a form of early assistance and is intended to provide feedback on early design concepts. This feedback is advisory and preliminary in nature. This meeting is not a land use review nor a final decision on this project. Commission comments are based on the information provided by staff and the project team prior to this meeting and through discussion today. The feedback that's given today will consider the allowances in the current zoning code. It's possible that the code could change before the land use submittal, and those changes could affect the proposal. The land use review application will be reviewed based on the zoning code in effect when an application is submitted. So the process today, staff, in this case, the planner is Tanya Paglia, will start the meeting by outlining the applicable zoning code standards, the area context, and the anticipated approval criteria. And the project team will then present their concept. And then Tanya will wrap up the presentation with topics to prompt commission's discussion. Public comments are welcome. If there are people attending today who would like to provide public comment, you are welcome to do so, please. And if you have not yet signed up, please let our clerks, Laura or Brian, know. You know, raise your hand electronically or find another way to let them know that you would like to provide public comment. Comments should relate to the concept's response to the approval criteria, specifically context, public realm, and quality and sense of permanence. And I believe that this proposal is subject to the community design guidelines. Please keep in mind that individual comments provided today will not be incorporated into the future land use review record. If this project is submitted as a land use review, members of the public will need to submit written comments or provide testimony at that time in order to have standing to appeal any future decision. Commissioners, do any commissioners have a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact to declare?
Nope.
No.
No.
I just looked at Google Maps, Google Street View.
Okay. So an electronic site visit from Chandra.
That's right. Probably from Commissioner Molnar also, but she's BRB, so.
Okay. Very good. Tanya, we are going to hand off to you for your presentation. I should say I don't have a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact either. So Tanya, it is all yours.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the first design advice request for the Park Avenue Apartments. And I think Julie already mentioned this project will be subject to a type 2 staff level design review should it be submitted for a land use review. So it will not be coming back before this commission unless that type 2 decision is appealed.
Darn.
Okay, so the presentation will start off with a quick staff overview of context and fundamentals. So the site is located in the Southwest Community Plan area. It's not located in a planned district. The approval criteria for the future design review for the site are the community design guidelines, as Julie mentioned. The site area is approximately 6,000 square feet, so it's smaller than a typical Portland downtown quarter block. The height limit is 100 feet, proposed is 94 feet. The base FAR is 4:1 with a maximum FAR of 7:1 if they use the deeper housing affordability bonus, which they have indicated they will be using. The FAR proposed is 5.6:1. The maximum lot coverage allowed is 85%, proposed is 63%. As an affordable housing project located near frequent transit, parking is not required for the site and no parking is proposed. The context of the site is diverse. The proposal is located at the base of the West Hills on a dead end street that includes 5 100-plus-year-old houses on the west side of the street, two of which would be demolished for the project. At the end of the street is the Park Avenue Garden apartment complex. The proposed building will be part of the southern terminus of the park blocks and is located in close proximity to the future green loop. The site's placement also functions as a bridgehead location on the south end of Park Avenue Bridge across I-405 that connects the area to the Central City Plan District to the north. And we're just going to show some images of the site from different angles. This is the looking directly at the site, looking south, and looking south down Park Avenue, and looking south across the bridge towards the site. Here we are looking north from the site towards the park lots. And we're looking north along Southwest Park Avenue towards Clifton. And we're looking east down Clifton with the site on the right-hand side of the photo. And we're looking west down Clifton. Okay, so the applicant is up next. So I'm handing it off to you, Ralph.
Pardon? Okay. Thank you all for your comments, Tanya. And I'm going to skip a few items on my presentation based on Tanya's description of the context and the area. as Tanya mentioned, we have no specific plan area requirements, design requirements, as we're right across Highway 405 from the central city. We use the general central city guidelines and the six design principles of the Green Loop as a guideline in our design of our project. I'm going to jump right into the site plan, as I believe that the area photos showed the context quite well. Although what I do want to mention is that from our site, you know, directly to the south, about 150 feet, it is almost a vertical climb. So that it provides us a small niche of residential. Our site slopes up to the south about 6 feet on along Park Avenue and along Clifton to the west, 10 feet. We've set the main lobby at grade, and there's a 12-foot recess covered entry plaza that goes from the sidewalk back to the corner. The building is set about 7 feet into the slope at the west end. So we've got approximately a 5 to 6 foot retaining wall along the north access. Get access to our electrical room, and it expands the glass area from our amenity space in the ground floor. Our entire ground floor is made up of amenity space, fitness room, lounge, an amenity room, lobby, and electrical room. Our northeast corner features a 9-story glass corner facing PSU and the downtown. As you saw from one of Tanya's photos, that as you come across the Park Avenue Bridge, it's a very visible corner. And we wanted to have create a very strong corner there as it relates to the Green Loop concept that starts on North Park Avenue blocks. units on the corner of are going to have very desirable views of the city, and we think those will be tremendous units. Most of our units have great privacy. They face the street, so there's only two units that the floor area faces an inner courtyard that I think is quite rare in this type of density. But the courtyard is going to be 40 feet deep by 25 feet wide. So that courtyard, that common courtyard, will provide 1,000 square feet of outdoor living area. Since we have a gentle slope going up, we're looking at it having like three distinct flat areas that can accommodate different groups of folks. the design concept, we've designed a disciplined, clean-lined building to employ the requirements of the construction type and the modular prefabrication efficiencies that we are after on this project. It's a pretty unique concept, and we have a number of really great folks on our team to accomplish this. Even with those kinds of restraints, we've accomplished a Portland personality that has pedestrian emphasis, contributes to a 24-hour city, and the location and the size of the site have really presented a constrained construction area, and folks following me can get into that in a little bit more detail. Building has three basic units based on a 12-foot, 6-inch wide module based on 24-foot wide, 4-foot long, 27 feet long, and 29 feet long to be craned in place as finished units, except for a gypcrete floor that we'll be adding once they're in place. The walls are going to be light gauge steel framed with a stucco panel exterior of the mod, and the windows will be in place, as will be required exterior vents. We're only anticipating two vent requirements. Building composition is very planar, and it presenting a slender articulated proportion. The proportions are roughly on the street facades 2.5 to 1, and I think it's a very elegant proportion for this type of building. The 9-story glass corner and overall massing presents a strong corner building that's oriented towards the north park blocks in the city. We're asking for one design exception request, and that is for window projection into the public right of way. The code allows a 12-foot wide oriel window, as you all know, and we're asking for 18 feet wide on the Park Avenue side. We think that this is a important element on this building, as it provides an emphasis at this prominent corner, provides additional articulation at our most visible corner, and improves livability of our units. It activates pedestrian street frontage. From here, I think my time is up, and I would like to have Chris DeLaurier address the transformer item that we have on this site. Chris?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for letting us come and present our case here. The project is going to need a pretty large transformer. You've seen the ground floor space and the architecture already. The size of the site is very limited to be able to develop a building like this. And so we're looking at being able to put a transformer in the right of way. Unfortunately, the frontages, the street frontages are in excess of 10% in their longitudinal slope. Which makes it pretty challenging to put a large vault in the sidewalk. And the utility providers aren't typically excited about those kind of slopes in the sidewalks on their vaults. So we're working with PBOT to negotiate requesting putting the vault on the north side of Clifton. In the city right away, we definitely don't want to engage the ODOT right away. And so we're hoping to gain some support from the DAR committee in regards to not asking us to redesign the ground floor space. There's very limited on-site space to the west and the south of the building to allow for the courtyards in some outdoor space. The area on the frontages between the building and the right-of-way, the arcade and active access from Clifton, is going to be taken up by detention system for stormwater, because we are going to have to provide some detention to meet the environmental services stormwater standards. So that's our request there, and we're just hoping to gain some support from the DAR committee on this request.
Okay, I think that the applicant, that you guys may be all wrapped up, and we will bounce back over to Tanya for her to give us an outline of discussion topics.
Okay, I think they need to stop screen sharing on their end. Okay, thank you. Okay, is everyone seeing my screen? All right, great, thank you. All right, so back to the five discussion topics. Okay, great. So we've got pedestrian experience, venting, balconies, prefabricated materials and assembly and context. And diving into those, the first topic is pedestrian experience. That encompasses a number of different issues. The first one is exposed loading. The loading is just, you know, right there on grade. That character of that zone hasn't been fleshed out. So we just wanted to give early feedback that needs to be an area that's multifunctional, that can serve not just as a vehicle dominated space, but also as a human scale piazza type of space with decent paving, landscaping, other features. And the fencing and gates along that property line should also keep that in mind. The next pedestrian realm issue is the sunken courtyard along the Clifton Street frontage. The Clifton Street frontage is significantly below the grade of the sidewalk, and the edge wasn't fleshed out in the plan set I saw. I don't know if the applicant brought more materials about that, but we like to keep an eye on that interface. In addition, there's a solid blank wall at the ground floor lounge. The louvers at the electrical room along Clifton, wondering if there's anything that could be done with that. There's potential ground level generator. So if that's needing to happen, we wanted to talk about the character of that area. And back to the vault, if the vault does end up on site, the DAR commission, the design commission doesn't have any sway on whether that is allowed to be in the right of way. That's going to be an entirely PBOT decision. So if PBOT forces us to keep that on site, just trying to figure out where that would go and what kind of parameters we want to put around that. The next issue is venting. Sounds like there isn't going to be a lot of different venting types according to what we just heard. Last I saw, there wasn't any information on venting. So we just want to get in there early and make that venting as well integrated into the design as possible from the get-go. Balconies, we feel like would give the building a residential sensibility. And it would also just create more active facades. And it would also make more livable units for the people living there and add human scale and articulation to the exterior of the building. And the prefabricated assembly of the building is something that we wanted to find out feedback from the commission on. This would be, I think, the largest, if not the second largest, prefabricated building in a design overlay zone. We just would love to know more about the joint seams, how this is going to come together on the exterior, and also how the upper floors, which are prefabricated, will fit with the ground floors that are assuming built on site into the sloping site. And then the final topic is the context of the site. This site is located in a highly liminal context where very different areas meet. It's located at the base of the West Hills adjacent to the central city, which sits just across I-405. It connects to the park blocks across the Park Avenue Bridge. And given the height proposed, it would be visible from a number of vantage points, both from the I-405 and from the buildings above and from Central City. So staff would like to hear from the commission if there are ways to enhance the response to that context. And we have acknowledged there are things acknowledging context already, such as the two-story height entry courtyard, which is facing towards that bridge. And that is the end of my presentation, and we are ready to take public comments right now.
Okay, thank you very much, Tanya. Laura, I'm gonna pop into my email inbox because I'm sure that you have sent me a list of people who would like to provide public comment.
They're actually all numbered in the attendee list. It might be easier for you.
Ah, okay, right on.
I'll go ahead and move the first five over as panelists.
Okay.
How many are there total?
I have 8 that are checked in, and then 3 that said they would like to testify, and I haven't seen their name checked in yet.
Okay, so for attendees who are here that are going to provide testimony today, typically we allow 2 minutes, public comment, not testimony. Testimony happens at the time of the land use review, and this is not a land use review, it is a design advice request. So today is public comment. We typically allow 2 minutes per person who is going to provide public comment. Please begin with your name and address for the record. And please limit your comments to the approval criteria. The Design Commission has a fairly limited set of approval criteria. It is the community design guidelines. We have no authority over the development code, the Portland Zoning Code, or other bureaus. So know that our powers are limited. First to testify, Laura.
Melanie.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, my name is Melanie Billings-Yun. I live at 1238 Southwest Cardinal Way, just above this proposed building, but I'm actually speaking on behalf of the Southwest Hills Residents League, which is the neighborhood association.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting me to elaborate on SWRL's response to this project. As I stated at the last hearing, SWRL supports affordable housing, and we do not oppose the construction of a residential multi-dwelling unit on this site. However, we have concerns about issues affecting the safety and livability of the residents around, and let me emphasize, within this building. That is our codified role. Given that responsibility, we raise 3 concerns with the project. First, the impact of the 11-story height next to historic houses and adjacent to an unstable cliff that has experienced a number of landslides during earlier construction projects. This has caused significant unease among the neighbors. We therefore ask that the potential impact on Cardinal Crest be explored at depth, and that the application provide a full explanation, that the applicant provide a full explanation of the measures proposed to alleviate that threat. 2, the absence of any on-site parking on a single block street that is congested during the day with PSU students and unsafe for parking at night due to regular vehicle break-ins, nightly vehicle break-ins. Applicants should be required to provide at least some on-site parking to mitigate. 3, finally, we do not support a building consisting solely of studio apartments, which are greatly overrepresented throughout Portland and especially in the area. This is the only sector in SWRL's boundaries eligible for high density, affordable family housing, providing low income children access to the Ainsworth Lincoln School Districts. We strongly believe a mixed unit concept would bring great benefit for all. I hope you will see that the issues we raise are not trivial, and we'll give them the consideration we ask for. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comment. The conversation that we have today will touch on some of the characteristics of the proposal that you have cited, although the height and the parking and also the unit mix are allowed by right through the conditions of the Portland Zoning Code and are not addressed in our approval criteria beyond how well they are responding to the context, to the development of the public realm, and if they seem to be of good quality and of a permanent nature. So we will have more conversation about it, but not quite in the way that you are framing this. Thank you very much for coming to provide comment. Our second commenter today is
Anil
Murthy.
Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Anil Murthy, and I live at 1246 Southwest Cardinal Way. And I want to bring up 2 main concerns. So I guess I'll first start by saying that we're not opposed to a project in the area, and we understand the need for affordable housing here. But the 2 big concerns that we have The first one of them is the potential landslide risk that this poses to homes around them, including ours, which is a little bit far away, but still is significantly at risk. Particularly in light of other landslides that have happened historically in the area, which is public information available out there. Given the size of the plot and the size of the building that is residing on it, we strongly believe that a much larger area or potentially a different area of town that is less prone to landslides would be a better choice. So that's number one. And then the second is just the general location, which is obviously going to be replacing one of the historical or a couple of the historical homes, as well as be next to many of the historical homes of the area, which kind of hinders a little bit of the cultural heritage of the area in general. So those are the two main comments. And I've had conversations with neighbors around in our area and heard similar concerns from them as well, although I can't speak for them entirely. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for coming to provide comment today. We will move to the third commenter. And that, sorry, Laura, I'm having a hard time scrolling today.
That's all right. Looks like Vlad.
Yes, can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you very much.
My name is Vladimir Trishkin. I live at 1258 Cardinal, just up the street. So I will just sort of speak plainly, but I walk quite a bit almost every day down through that area. And that whole area has got, you know, sort of a charm. It's got really old buildings, really old houses that are very rare for downtown Portland. Houses like that, I don't know whether they're marked historic or not, but houses like that are typically in other neighborhoods like Southeast and further away from downtown. So this is kind of it's a very Portland spirited area. So I looked at the plan and just imagining this large building, it seems like they're trying to squeeze and build a huge building in an area that's doesn't seem like it's completely suited for that. Not just speaking from the design standpoint, but it seems it doesn't seem right for what kind of Portland look and values go for, where we have, to try to preserve some history and instead of just building apartments everywhere. Unless there's some other that we just run out of area, I would strongly urge the city to look elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to provide comment today. Okay, Laura, can you tell me who's next?
Yeah, Julie, let's go back to number four. Keen?
Excellent, thank you. Yeah.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, this is Chin Hong from 1240 Southwest Cardinal Way. Okay. And we live right above the proposed site. And if you guys can take a walk here, that proposed building is like less than 100 feet from the slope. Our house is built above the slope on the steel pillars. So like normally, like when there's heavy duty truck pass by, we can feel some vibrate and the rocks keep falling to the down of the hills. So we're really concerned if there's a 11-story building right built down the slope, our house will our house still be there? Will we get crushed or get, I'm just very concerned about the safety of me, my husband, and my family, and the other neighbors who have the same type of building along the Cardinal Way. This, as the other neighbors mentioned, there are some landslides, histories, and we're very worried about that. And if there's more evidence or, more liability, like the applicants can provide some sort of a liability insurance and, one of our labor mentioned the 100 million liability insurance that might be required. So that's one concern. The second is the we are the steeled house, so built on the pillar by the slope is very, very important. If you take a walk towards like towards this side, is beautiful with beautiful, neat and beautiful, and with some family, single family houses down there. So with a new 11 story building right in the middle of family houses, we doubt how beautiful it will look like. To me, just imagine it, it will be a little bit weird. Yeah, so so if for the design perspective from the city, I thought we encourage the city to find another location. This location is really unique, Portland, and very yeah. This new building will ruin the beauty of this side of the city. So we urge you guys, if you can find other locations, please help to preserve this beautiful site. Thank you. Oh, hello?
Okay, next okay. one, Scott.
Thank you, Laura. Yeah.
Okay, this is Scott. My name is Scott Gillis, and I am the owner of 2069 Southwest Park Avenue, which is right at the foot of the hill that we're talking about and two doors down from the proposed site. I'll just be very brief. I've got really two major objections, one of which has been, probably both of which have been already stated by other people. First is a life safety issue. Our house, which is 100 some odd years old, is right at the foot of the hill with the houses right above it that are on piers on the side of, I guess it's Cardinal Way. So with this 11-story building, they're going to have to dig down 30 or 40 feet and drive piers in and all that. I'm concerned for the foundations of the houses in the area. I'm concerned for the foundations of the ones on the hillside. They are on the toe of the hillside where they're building, and it's going to be 400 feet straight up. So I think it's a huge liability issue for the builder, for the geotech, for anybody else involved, but it's also a life safety issue for the tenants in my building and the people that are living on the hill. My second issue is the that this design does not fit the character of the neighborhood. As you saw on the pictures the city put up, this is a tree-lined neighborhood on a park with 100-year-old houses in both directions. And the high-rises are on the other side of the freeway, you know, over by PSU or beyond. So it's across the freeway, down the street, across the freeway, and at least a couple more blocks. So this is an old historic neighborhood. It does not fit the design criteria. And I think that's the key issue here. It's going to change it forever. Every other house in this neighborhood is two stories. There might be one that's three, but basically it's a two-story neighborhood of old Victorian homes. The freeway is a major divider, and I think it would be really smart to maintain the character of this neighborhood and let the high rises be across the street. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming to provide comment today. Our next commenter is Alyssa Sena.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Alyssa, and I am representing the address at 2073 Southwest Park Avenue. I represent the owners of Park Avenue Garden Apartments. We do not oppose the affordable housing development project at this time. The main concern that I would like to voice is going to be the entry and exit of the tenants that currently park in our parking lot located just right above where this development is slated to be. With construction going on there, parking is already fairly tight in this neighborhood, and I just foresee potential issues of that area specifically upon entry and exit for our community. So I would just like to just have an idea of what the plan would be for that and the workers and the different trucks that might be there upon that development process.
Thank you very much. Okay, our next commenter, we will have more conversation about that. Our next commenter is
Matt.
Matt Gillis.
I'm here. So my biggest concern with this project is the landslide susceptibility. This hillside from the proposed development site up the hill gains 400 feet of elevation between the site and Governor's Park. According to Portland Maps, I pulled the landslide data from the DOGME maps and a lot of the landslides. There's been at least 15 landslides documented on that hillside. And by digging down 20 or more feet, you're taking out the toe of the hillside that holds that hill in place. And that's a huge life safety issue. The Safeway in Astoria, Oregon, dug down like 10 to 15 feet and hundreds of homes slid, and it was a massive lawsuit. And so my biggest request from the city is that the developer and anyone involved in the project have at least $100 million in liability coverage in case they cause the hillside to slide. The house is on stilts, so 30 feet off the ground, could just fall off the hillside if the contractor fails to shore it up properly during construction. And that's a huge issue. I mean, if for some reason the contractor slightly messed up, those houses on stilts could fall off the hillside. And I don't think it's the right place to do it, taking the toe of the hillside out it's about a 60% grade. I did send an email to Tanya with photos of the hillside and all the landslide maps that I asked to add to the record, which I'll submit to the record at another time. But there's documented landslides from the Oregon Geology Department and DOGME maps, and the soil doesn't support, you know, digging out the toe of a hillside is always a bad idea because that's what holds the rest of the dirt in place. And so I think there's a better location. Most of the skyscrapers are across the 405 freeway and that's more flat and it's not directly at the toe of the hillside. This proposed development is about 35 feet from where it goes straight up. And I've emailed in photos of that, but I think that should be a high consideration. I'm a manager of 2069 Southwest Park, which is one door away, and it's right up against that hillside. And there's a house on stilts directly above us. And I think for such a tall building, if it was 2-3 stories, 4 stories, it wouldn't be a big deal. But when you go 11 stories, you have a deep foundation, and that causes a lot of concern from a geotechnical perspective with the hillside that has already slid, and the mapping shows it as highly susceptible to landslides. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Our next commenter today is Brian Ronan.
Hello, can you all hear me?
We can, thank you.
Great, thank you for hearing my comments. I actually joined this meeting not ready to testify, but I think one of the things in the design review or just hearing the plans, I was very concerned by a certain thing, so I just wanted to mention it as a concern. I do have the same concerns as what everyone else has voiced about parking and lot size and scale of building and such. I just want to say that I think it would kind of ruin the texture of the neighborhood. If anyone who's ever been to this neighborhood kind of laughs whenever they hear the scale of this project. So I just want to add my vote to that as well. But the thing that I'm most concerned about was actually brought up by the staff as well, which is the use of prefabricated elements. I live at 2065 Southwest Park, and we're directly next to it. And a building of that height, using prefabricated rooms and floors and stuff, so is a huge concern to me, largely because of safety and other such things. So I'd like to hear some more comments about that. Thank you for hearing me out.
Okay, thanks for coming to comment today. After Brian Ronan, we will hear from
Thomas.
Hello,
Thomas Peachman. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, hi. My name's Thomas Peachman, Tom. I'm a resident of Cardinal Way. I'm at 1252, so I'm further down the hill to the east from the proposed project. My main concern is safety, kind of like a lot of other than neighbors. I'm surprised so many people came to voice the same concern, but it makes a lot of sense. So I'm on one of the houses on stilts, and if you go to the end of the street, at the end of the park blocks, and you look up, it's pretty obvious how precarious the situation is on the hill. I'm further down the hill, and I'm worried about crashing down the hill. But if you look at the western portion of the hill, directly above the proposed project, they're up on the tiny little sticks. They're on piles, and this hill is very, very steep. And it doesn't look stable on its face. If you just look up, not being an engineer, it looks a little scary. I have concerns about drilling in piles deep into the ground for such a tall, skinny building. I'm also concerned about the landslide risk. There's been prior slides. It's an unstable part at the foot of the hill. I worry about my house and this hill falling off. I'd be especially worried if I was on the western edge. The building is taller than a lot of the stuff on the other side of the highway, including pretty much all of PSU. I imagine that they would have to disrupt the earth to do it, and I'm just worried about the slide risk.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for coming to provide comment today. And I think that might be it. Laura, is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, if there are any other attendees who would like to provide comment but have not yet signed up, raise your electronic hand right now and you will have the opportunity. Okay, so Ralph. Yes, there you are. Okay, very good. Ralph, 8 out of 9 people who commented are very concerned about the structural integrity of the structures that surround this site. I'm guessing that you have or will soon have both a geotech engineer and a structural engineer on board, and that you probably also plan to have a lot of conversation with the neighbors in the immediate area about how their buildings will remain secure while your building is under construction. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. And yes, frankly, I'm designing a couple houses up in Cardinal above the folks that spoke, and a lot of those houses that are that they're talking about, they were all built primarily on wood piling, and they are having failures. We are doing houses above those, and they are all entirely on steel piling. And so we're very aware of that, and yes, we place a high value on getting the appropriate geotechnical engineers, and we have very good structural engineers on board. And you know, due to time, they didn't get to talk right now, but hopefully in our discussion, you know, they can go into a number of these items in detail, because we know they're important, as well as prefabricator that can talk to some of that. I mean, part of our prefabrication process is to limit the amount of traffic that comes in, to limit the amount of construction disturbance, and to build offsite as much as possible so that we can live with limited staging areas and not cause a number of the problems that are normal with conventional construction.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for that. So with respect to geotech and structural issues, I would encourage you to host a community meeting outside of this venue, because those concerns, while very real, are not tied to the Design Commission's approval criteria. So to the extent that we spend a lot of time there today, we don't get to give you feedback on the building's response to the design guidelines, which is where the commission would like to focus. Yeah. So you know,
we definitely will. We'll okay. Doing that. Yes.
Okay. So neighbors, now you know there will be conversation with the architect and the developer and the engineers around safety and security if this building proceeds. A couple of questions for Tanya. Tanya, are the houses that are currently located on this property protected? Are they actually historic?
They're old, but they're not protected. There's five houses in a row, and one of them is protected, but not the ones that would be impacted by this project.
Okay. So neighbors, know that the houses that are going to be removed do not have any historic protections. The applicant, the developer, is within rights to purchase the land and to deconstruct or demolish the houses to build new, because the houses are not protected. Also, Tanya, is there any requirement for parking at this site? Must there be off-street parking provided?
No, because of the deeper housing affordability nature of the project, and because they're within a certain distance of transit. So they don't have any parking requirement on the site because of those two things.
Okay, so the no parking requirement is part of the Portland zoning code, and it is not part of guidelines. So we will set that issue aside today and probably won't have much conversation about it. Ralph, one more question for you. This has been described several times as affordable housing.
Yes.
Is this regulated affordable housing, or are these units that are small and therefore less expensive?
It is regulated affordable housing.
Okay.
For 60% AMI.
Okay.
And the deeper housing requirement in code allows us to have the density bonus if we meet 50% of the requirement of 60%, but the entire building will be for 60% AMI.
Okay, that's great to know. Thank you very much. So commissioners, do you have any questions for Tanya or the applicant before we move to discussion?
I have one quick question. How many of the houses that we're seeing are coming out? So there's four in a row on that side, it looks like, until you butt up against the hill.
Two.
Okay, thank you.
I have a quick question.
Julie.
Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Could the mechanical engineer bring up that drawing showing where the transformer vault is going? Because I don't think that was in our package, and it was just too small on the screen to really see what was going on. Just wonder if we could take one more look at that.
So initially we were gonna try to see if we could get it in the sidewalk. You see it kind of encroaches into the property.
And can you zoom in just a little bit?
So initially we were gonna try to get it on Clifton in the frontage property. It encroaches into the sidewalk a little bit. We've had to modify the storm and put storm detention systems in there. Being a modular building with the foundation systems and the street slopes, that street slopes at 10% in the longitudinal direction. And there is a reasonably flat area on the north side of Clifton within the city's owned right of way that will really accommodate this transformer. There's not enough ground floor space to put a transformer inside the building or under the building, which are options that we've explored and pursued and gotten to in the past. And one of the reasons is the utility provider needs 25 feet of vertical clearance and to be able to access the vault directly. And it makes
to be able to lift out a transformer.
That's correct. And given the small site and the constraints of the site, there's no other location on site that's going to work outside of the building to accommodate the size and clearance requirements to keep pedestrians away from this type of equipment as well.
Okay, so what you're proposing, if you scoot up on the screen, is you're proposing alternatively to place it across the street. Is that the right interpretation?
That's correct, and we fully understand that the design committee has no say in where the transformer goes. But what we're asking for is understanding of the site constraints, meeting the outdoor plaza requirements for outdoor space, given the in the building construction type, that it's going to be very challenging to get a building that works feasibly economically if we can't move this transformer off of the property into the right of way, and subsequently hopefully across the street in the city's right of way.
Okay, so this drawing is showing the vault as you originally proposed it, trying to fit it into the Clifton sidewalk, and then it's also showing this alternative to move it across the street. So if you were successful moving it across the street, the sidewalk in front of Clifton could remain more of a pedestrian realm.
Exactly. We'll certainly get another street tree in there. And urban forestry is going to be excited about that. There's no dedication requirements on this frontage either. So, and the opportunity. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's all my question. Thank you.
Plus the area from the north curb line of Clifton to 405 is probably unusable.
It's pretty undevelopable, yes.
I just want to weigh in that when we had an early assistance appointment recently, PBOT strongly reinforced that, you know, they always prefer that be on site as the first option. And so it sounds like you've done a lot of exploration and there are reasons why it can't go on site, but you will have to prove that to PBOT. The design commission can't change that outcome. I think I just brought it up in our memo as a like if it is on site, what kind of feedback would the commission have for that? But yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, thanks for the clarification, Tanya. Yeah, Chris and Ralph, I appreciate your asking us for a little bit of support in this, but truthfully, we have absolutely no influence over this decision. So good luck. I hope it goes your way. Commissioners, other questions?
That's good enough.
Quick question. If someone, Ralph, if you could have someone, I don't know, part of your team, describe the PFAB system a little bit. Who is it to begin with? Have they done any of these projects before? And what is the composition? And what is the quality of that exterior cladding?
I'm sorry, Commissioner Rodriguez, I missed the first part of your comment.
Just a little bit more information on the prefab system. Who is the company that produces this? Do you have examples of it that we can check out images, and what's the cladding quality and joint qualities? Because I mean, these things are coming pre-assembled, you're joining them. How is that done? Could you describe that a little bit?
Right. You know, it's really a combination of our structural engineers, Shirley Chalupa of DCI Engineering, and Nathan Young of Mods PDX, who's the prefabricator. Maybe I should have Nathan start it, and Shirley can speak to, you know, our construction type that we are using.
And Nathan and Shirley, if you do speak, please address quality and permanence issues specifically, and we're down to 30 minutes, and we want to give good feedback. So also keep comments short.
Yes. Hi, this is Nathan Young. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I own Mons PDX. There's actually two questions here. So we would be performing the construction of the modular units that would be going in. The cladding is actually a different manufacturer that would be installing the stucco panels, but we'd be installing them in the shop. So those are set up to basically be able to join back together on site. Each module, as was described, is roughly 12 foot 6 by 24 to 29 feet. They would be joining on the face where the window side is. And then there's only a couple of the units on the end corners that would have stucco that would wrap all the way around them. So we've done several modular projects in Portland. This would be the tallest modular project done in Portland to date. That's why the type of construction is a little bit different. Typically, we're doing mostly wood framed boxes. These ones would be a combination of MPP or mass plywood panels and light gauge steel studs. The construction process is extremely similar to on-site construction, except we're building off-site in a manufacturing facility. Inspections are done through the state. There's a very high quality control process that takes place to make sure that each one of these are gonna go together. And obviously the tolerances have to be extremely tight when you're building a 10-story building to make sure that everything's gonna line up as it moves through. And with that, I could pass it over to Shirley to talk about the structural components of that.
Hi, I'm Shirley. So I hope you guys can hear me. So I'm not going to be speaking about the quality of the appearance. I'm a structural engineer, so I'll be talking about the system. And this type of construction is going to be the first one in Portland. Because like Nathan was mentioning, it's a modular construction, and because we are trying to fit as many units as possible in such a small site, so it will be a totally different system that we have to think outside the box. We are looking at the Type 4B because we wanted to utilize MPP because of its panelization and the modularization components. So it'll be a very unique Type 4B because Type 4B was supposed to be for mass timber, a tall mass timber building, but it's going to be unique because we are trying to fit in an MPP, which is a mass timber component, into a high rise.
Okay, thank you very much.
Is there a structural, is the structural system concrete or steel or all wood?
Yeah, so there are two components to this. So there's a gravity system and there's a lateral system. Mm-hmm. The lateral system will be a concrete core that's basically going to be surrounding the stair and the elevator. Mm-hmm. So we have two concrete cores because we have two stair towers going up. And then the boxes will be the gravity system, and they will be essentially be connected together, sit on top of each other, and then we will connect back to the concrete course. On the second level, there will be a concrete podium because, you know, the units stop at the second floor, and then there will be a amenity and lobby space and all that at the ground floor.
Mm-hmm. I thought there have been a couple of questions about what happens where the two modules come together. On the exterior, is there a rubber gasket of some sort, or how do you keep water out of this thing?
Yes, there will be, Don, a joint where the two units come together, and those joint lines, that go vertically, mm-hmm. Are pretty much like what you'd see on a stucco building anyway. And so, you know, we've got like a 1-inch separation that we have to accommodate anyway between units. And mm-hmm. So, yes, we'll have a joint system there, and we're, trying to figure out the best way to do that. We're kind of modeling it after the joint system that was done on building that at 12th and Market. I think it's called the Storybook Apartments, I think. And when you go up and look at it really closely, it's got a very similar joint system to what we will be having. And frankly, our units will be joined every 12 feet, 6 inches. And due to the articulation we have in the building, there's really three units that get attached that would be visible. So we'd have two vertical lines going up. We'll also have joint lines, of course, a horizontal line as you would see in any multi-story building. So yeah, we're working on that, and you know, we'll have like a half inch to an inch joint at each one of those.
It's back a rod and sealant between the.
Yes. Cool. And yeah, you know, we're looking at a few different products, and we will be working also with a facade consultant to make sure we get our detailing correct. So we're not quite, you know, to that detail yet, I'll have to say.
So commissioners, we have about 25 minutes and a lot of topics to cover. So I'm gonna move us to discussion. Let's start with the pedestrian experience, guidelines related to the pedestrian realm. Really sorry, trouble talking. The location of the loading, the fact that it is open air, the sunken court along the north elevation, the blank wall at the lounge on the street, I think that's on Park, louvers at the electrical room, the generator location, vault, these issues that Tanya surfaced for us. Who would like to begin with some thoughts on how the buildings is responding to the public realm guidelines? Anybody's welcome. Any commissioner.
Yep. I think, would you like me to just follow the guidelines, Julie?
Oh,
just
that's great, Brian. Yeah, totally, totally.
Whatever tackle, yeah. I think it provides an adequate pedestrian realm from the, I mean, in terms of what's in the right-of-way. You know, separated walking zone, street trees. That's E1. I don't think that, we don't know, we can't comment on E2 stopping places yet. E3, I think there's some significant issues with the topography and the ground floor of the building, parts of it being sunken out of view down into kind of like a little hole. And I think they've got to work on that quite a bit to make that meet E3, because it's not working right now. E4 is sort of somewhere in the middle. I think the Oriole window and the corner expression is strong looking out towards the city. It's a little bit of a concern that those are bedrooms. That needs some further development. The weather protection on E5, this is not really a downtown street with continual canopy coverage, and so I don't know quite how that applies here, because up and down the street there's no other really buildings built right up to the right-of-way line with continuous canopies, so it's a little hard to figure out how to apply E5. I think the recessed entryway is a good thing. As you're coming in from wherever you walk to, and you gotta shake off your umbrella, I think it's good to have that deep recess there. But again, the sunken nature of the courtyard is, it's got septet issues, it's just got activation issues. D1 outdoor areas, I think it's too early to tell. We need to see a lot more cross sections into the rear courtyard and some of those things to be able to really know what to say. I think the main entrance is relatively well expressed, but it's in the elevations, it's just barely outside of the portion of the facade that's getting buried by the rising sidewalk. So still a concern. I think the street tree development around the two sides is okay. Again, this is under D3 landscape features. I think we need to know a lot more about the rear courtyard before we can tell whether that's complying. D4 is not applicable. D5 would fall into the, well, I think the loading court is a question. Where it's located, there's really no eyes on that space. And could you end up with that being used not in the way it's intended? And then the sunken courtyards present a problem with eyes on the street. And I think the lounge space, the lack of windows coming out of there is a real question mark.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Other commissioners, other thoughts? Chandra?
Yeah. Brian, I agree with a lot of what you said. And I think that the main areas that I was concerned about are that sunken courtyard, because I think it won't be well used if there's not enough light in there, if it's sunken too much, if there's too much plantings. And I think it could be potentially unsafe. So I think that one is a bit of an issue for me. I definitely agree with staff that the blank wall in the lounge is just so easy to add some transparency there and really activate the street a little bit more by showing the activity that's happening in the building. I think that one's a no-brainer, and sure that the designers would agree that's probably a really easy thing for them to fix. Those are the real ones that I was concerned about. Considering the character of the neighborhood, that you really want to make sure that you have some sort of similar quality when you're walking around this corner as in the rest of that tiny pocket, right? It's you can really see what's going on in those spaces. There's not like a hidden corner where someone could hide. There's definitely tents across that street that are already happening. So I think there's just an issue about, you know, visibility in general. And so I think as far as pedestrian and public realm, that's the biggest concern.
Thanks a bunch, Chandra. Zeri, would you like to go?
Oh, I am unmuted. Well, you know, I was going to talk about the same things that both Chandra and Brian talked about. I think the building is the corner, the main colonnade where the entrance is very, very successful. And on the Park Avenue side, it's an easy fix, as Chandra said. The lounge gives an opportunity to have more glazing there, so that's okay. And more attention to that loading zone, because the loading zone is not going to be in perpetual use. How it connects to the courtyard in the back, and how it could be just a pleasant entrance that way from the street, or at least visual connection to the courtyard. That's important. I think I also thought about this sunken area on the Clifton side, and kept thinking, well, what can be done with it? And there are ways that area could, from inside, from the tenant's perspective, could be designed and treated that would become an asset. But from the public realm perspective and pedestrians' perspective, that doesn't solve the problem. And then by looking at the site and the map, there aren't that many residential area on those two streets, 10th Avenue and that, and there wouldn't be a lot of pedestrian movement in that area. But, you know, I think that's a problem, but I couldn't even think about what are the ways that they could approach it to deal with that problem. So I'm going to leave it with that.
Okay. Thanks, Siri. Sam?
Yeah. A lot of agreement with everything. So in interest of time, I'll be brief. I still think it's the entrance is successful. I agree totally with Zeri. I think the pushback is a great solution to not having the weather protection being on the outside. I mean, I get it. The weather protection is on the sidewalk. It's the intent. But in a neighborhood like this, I think this is a pretty successful way to, one, mark the entrance, to still create that little bit of, you could actually go down there and, if there's a, you know, big rain event or something, you could protection, or at least for the residents, right? The window on the lounge is a no-brainer. I mean, I think it's just a matter of putting it in there. It's, I agree with that. I think the courtyard on Clifton is probably no here nor there. It doesn't solve the problem for the residents. I mean, opening that 3-foot door into a 5-foot corridor that's looking down on you is probably just as unpleasant for the people who are going to use it. So my question to the design team is whether that can be expanded and it's actually more amenity space and it's a window line that's a little high. Because, I mean, this is a big slope neighborhood and you need to deal with it. And that's one way to deal with it. As you can still have windows looking into it. So there's still some activation, but it's on the window face and it doesn't have that unsafe, like Chandra mentioned, unsafe condition that you don't know if people are going to be hiding behind. It's an odd condition. So, and it might be a matter of also pulling the building up a slight little bit so that that proportions on the facade don't get so narrow that it's uncomfortable and it's kind of oppressive on the facade side. So that's my general comments.
Okay, thanks, Sam. Don.
Corner treatment is pretty successful. You know, this thing works pretty well the way it orients to the city, the way the city will view it. I think that's the most successful part of the building. Lounge is an obvious one. The loading, I don't have any issue with that. I think it's going to work just fine. And then it comes to the courtyard, I guess, on, I believe that's Clifton. And I'm not sure, there's not a section through there, so we don't see really how deep that courtyard is as the sidewalk goes up or how steep the courtyard is, at least on the drawing set that I have. So, I mean, if in the amenity space, if that space is 2 to 4 feet below sidewalk line, I don't think that's particularly of a major concern. I think it can still operate pretty well. There'll be this sidewalk going up at an angle, guardrails along it, et cetera. And the electrical room, you wonder if that shouldn't be up a little higher so it opens directly to the rear of the building rather than into that courtyard. Maybe it shouldn't go back that far because that's a place that's potentially gets a lot of debris and potentially unsavory activities, et cetera. So I'd take a look at that whole area and maybe bring it out. But if the amenity space is not more than about 4 feet deep, I think that works okay. And I think as has been mentioned, there's really not a lot of pedestrian activity in this area. It's a pretty isolated little pocket of downtown. So canopies, et cetera, I don't think there's that's much of a concern as there's very little public interaction out on the sidewalk level. And I think the arcade provides a lot of protection for residents in the building. Potentially neighbors can meet and talk with some of the people there also. So, and I think Brian mentioned bedrooms, but these are studio apartments of 288 square feet. So there is no living space as compared to the sleeping space. It's pretty much just all one compact little unit. So there's not much to be done about that. End of comment. Yeah.
Thanks, Don. Okay, so thanks, commissioners. I agree with just about everything that was said. Ralph, I think the corner, the way the lower floors carve out to make the entry is pretty successful. The sunken courtyard to the north is problematic for the reasons that other commissioners described. Is it true, Ralph, that the lower couple of floors are site built? And then everything from the second story up or the third story up is craned in?
It will be from the third floor up.
Third floor up. Okay, so you've got real architectural work to do on those lower floors.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome. So Brian mentioned a handful of guidelines, and I agree with everything he said. I think that E3 is not being met. That is, create a sense of enclosure and visual interest to buildings along sidewalks and pedestrian areas. E1 is not being met. Create an efficient, pleasant, and safe network of sidewalks and paths for pedestrians. D5 is not being met. Use site design and building orientation to reduce the likelihood of crime through design and placement of windows entries and active ground floor uses. And D1 is not being met. When sites are not fully built on, place buildings to create sizable, usable outdoor areas. And it's for all of the reasons that the commissioners described. Blank wall on the street, the courtyard on the north. And what I wonder is, given how much square footage you have at that ground floor and how much is being pressed down into the basement, if there is another strategy that takes the parking, the electrical room, you know, all of the utilities that are coming into the site and all of the back of house functions that need to be provided for, and putting them on one street only, rather than splitting them between the two streets. Because I think that there's, you are losing the strength on both streets. You are losing the strong pedestrian response on both streets by splitting those. And if you could gang it all together, then one street's gonna be absolutely fantastic and the other street is gonna be a little bit compromised. And you know, as I looked at this, I mean, you've got a lot of slope. Can you use that to your advantage to do kind of a split level in those lower floors that does exactly what Don says and brings electrical and back of house services in through that little alleyway along the west side of the building, slightly higher than what is actually your elevation for lobby and entry at that corner, which is working really nicely. But you know, can you do a little bit of a split level thing there? If you do that, I've only looked at this for a couple of hours. You've been looking at it for weeks, I know. If you can do that, though, can you pull up that bike parking? Can you build less basement? Because truthfully, why in the world would you want to dig that much? I know there are existing basements on site, but why would you want to dig that much just to put bikes in the basement? Can you pull the bikes up so that people can just wheel their bikes in at grade, and then you'll end up with greater bike ridership, right? I mean, putting the bikes in the basement is a headache for bike riders. So, you know, there's a lot of program space at that that first level. I have no idea what is sacred and what can be reworked, but it seems like you really could push some of that basement up and condense things a little bit, unless you are like really providing a lot of on-site social services and need all those rooms, because, you know, what really is going to happen there is significant social service delivery. If it's just there because you've got the space, think about moving the bikes up. Think about pushing everything up a little bit and doing what Don suggested.
I had a similar idea. When you look at the north elevation, Don was asking how buried is that is that west end. It looks like it's about a 5.5 to 6 foot wall down into that pit. And that's just right, to your Brian. Point, if the ground floor is kind of like a high ceiling space with a mezzanine, I think there's examples of buildings around town that step up the street with the grade so you don't end up with these sunken pits.
Huh. Yeah, but you have to push the building up a bit, and that's
you part do. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, there's enough grade change. I mean, Clifton is dramatic. There's enough grade change there that you could really play with that. You know, it seems like that's an opportunity.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So Tanya raised issues of venting and the prefab assembly. There's just a lot more detail that's needed there. And this is DAR. I'm sure that you will, you know, reach a point where you will provide adequate information on venting and the prefab assembly. Commissioners, does anybody have any kind of really early thoughts about those issues that they would like to share?
Well, the example that they were showing of the other tall prefab building, it had these little Juliets. And I think what this building really lacks, I mean, it's got a very, very strong corner, and I really like the Orioles, and I actually don't have a problem with an 18-foot Oriole. I mean, this is hard for me to believe, but it really enhances that building. But balconies, I mean, this is a residential area. This is what is, it needs to distinguish itself, this building, from looking like an office building. So especially in this neighborhood. So that's something that Tanya brought up, and I'm 100% behind it, that there needs to be a look at that.
think theory.
Yeah, the prefab system may allow some more variation than you're showing here. Everything is exactly the same. It may not have to be. You could do one that instead of being 28 feet deep is 24 feet deep, and there's room for a recessed balcony, for example, which would enrichen the facade. And also, maybe you ought to just, Ralph, take a look at how you can kind of modify the prefab system to get a little more variety and enliven the facade a little more in this thing.
John, you know, what we've kept as gospel is like the 12 foot six dimension. But yes, our three unit types go from 24 feet to 27 feet to 29 feet. So what you're saying is something that we can certainly consider.
Yeah, it would just enrichen the whole thing, and I think make it more attractive to residents in the area as well as from a distance, the building composition.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if it...
I had a question relating to the facade on the south side and west side. There are less glazing in that area. Can you explain why that is? Is there is it because the opportunity for development in the future?
Absolutely, that's why.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
And, we deliberately kept it that way. And I think if you when you look at the plan, you'll see that we have only two units on the west side that, you know, look into what we think is pretty generous courtyard of 40 feet deep by 25 feet on this kind of density. And we think that's just going to get more and more valuable as the other parcels develop, as it will probably be one of the few internal open spaces that will go up as far as everybody else wants to go up.
Right.
That's our thought. And it was totally out of respect for, you know, when somebody else develops right next to us.
Yeah.
So Commissioners Zeri touched on balconies, which was an issue Tanya raised. Don touched on the residential character or not of the architecture. We've got about 5 minutes left. Does anybody else want to toss in on those topics?
I was going to say that I really do agree with Zeri when she said that adding some balconies is going to contribute to it not looking like an office building, because that's sort of my overall comment. I think the design is coherent and it's very regular, and I don't find any fault with it. I think that the corner with more glazing and the wider oriel window, that's the width of that living space, makes total sense. But the fact is, it really does look like an office building in the way that it's rendered currently, understanding this is very early on, it's DAR. And so yes, adding balconies, I think, would add a level of detail that we can't see now, that we probably would see in the future with more developed renderings. But as the design stands now, it looks like an office building, and adding a level of detail by having balconies would go a long way towards making it feel more residential. And because that building will have such grand views in many directions, I think it's a great gesture to be able to open up this very small apartment, if it's a studio, and actually let you get some like full height fresh air, right? Not just crack your window open a little bit, but really be able to lean out, see the city, really get some good air circulation in there in your small living space. You have provided amenity spaces for all of the tenants, which is really important when all of these apartments are studios. You can't live your whole life in this tiny space. You need somewhere else to go. So I really appreciate that. But I think the next level then of making this a comfortable residential building in the neighborhood is adding scale of detail, and not every surface is glazing, right? Because that's what makes it very reflective and makes it seem like it belongs in a different neighborhood. And so as far as the way that it responds to the context, that's where I think the project needs more work. Because you are near a lot of smaller buildings that are older and have a lot of different character that I don't recommend that you apply to this building, but just understanding that, you know, again, it's early. It's DAR, right? There's development in the skin that's going to happen that, you know, you just really have the opportunity to go that direction and make it feel more residential.
What would the commission think about if we added a rooftop deck, which would offer, you know, access to every one of the units and offer tremendous views all the way around?
Go for it. I was actually going to suggest that you see a lot of condos and market rate towers, they have outdoor amenity space in the middle of the building. I mean, can you imagine providing something like that for people who are at this level? Exactly. And with the view of downtown, everybody on the hill behind them has it. Right. I would encourage you to do that. That means the point is that the buildings that we're building for people with lower income, they should be at the same level of quality and same level of amenities as the other buildings, especially in this neighborhood. So if you could do it, that would be fabulous.
Thank you.
I think the roof garden could be great, but I want to echo what Chandra just said. I don't think it takes the place of what balconies do for the full 11 stories,
right,
in terms of really giving a residential rendering to this building.
Well, okay. I agree. It should be an addition. Yes.
Yeah. Another thing you could look at, Ralph, is just taking out a unit on, I believe it's the Clifton Park side.
Mm-hmm.
Just leaving one out and it becomes an outdoor space for
right. Little
floors. You could do that and kind of maybe two or three of those as it goes up the building for every two or three floors, and then they would have an outdoor space, and you would also really enrich on the facade and give it some real character.
Hmm.
Something else to take a look at.
Thank you.
But your residents are really going to appreciate having some outdoor space no matter what. And I think Zari at one point on another project brought up the issue. There'll probably be quite a few smokers in this building, maybe an area where they can smoke and have a slight shelter over them or whatever to get them out of the building. And away from the front arcade would be ideal also. Because you're going to have them. Yeah.
One of the reasons we made it 12 feet deep.
So before we wrap up our conversation, I want to touch also on balconies and the building's architecture, because the architecture is really all about the response to context. And the corner entry, the way that corner carves away at the lower floors is fantastic. An 11-story building is allowed by right. You can absolutely do that. You can even do more than that. The idea of the oriel window is fine. And the fact that you would need an exception to make it a little bit longer is okay. The thing about that oriel window, though, is that it really does contribute to the commercial quality of the building. And I think that takes it a little farther away from a successful contextual response than where it will eventually land. And the fact that those are studio apartments, they're small apartments that people really truly do live in, and they have floor to ceiling glass, is that's a difficult thing to negotiate, right? I mean, whether you're inside or outside, like if you're looking out or if you're looking in, it's not necessarily ideally livable. And I wonder if the idea of balcony is something that could be deployed where the oriel is. You know, if there is a way to design that really impressive corner slightly differently to give people the opportunity to live their life a little more discreetly inside that building wall. But, you know, I think that the emphasis is absolutely right, and just maybe it needs a different architectural treatment. And I absolutely agree that balconies, even if it's just a dead simple Juliet in the plane of the building wall, as long as it allows you to open up more than a window, it is really a successful move for the facade of the building, and does a lot to respond to guidelines and also fit well into context. Okay. Closing thoughts from other commissioners?
Well, I just wanted to commend the development team for taking a look at prefab units and seeing what they did with that. And hopefully we'll get more experience with this type of thing and cut our construction costs down and make units more affordable for everybody. So good luck with this, Ralph. I think you're going the right path.
Thanks, Don.
And look forward to seeing this being developed and how it comes out.
Julie, I just want to add one thing that, first of all, I wanted to say that I really appreciated hearing the neighbors' concerns. And of all of them, the only one that we could really encourage the architects and engineers and the development team to respond to is the issue of safety and landslide, which hopefully they will work with. But the issue of heights and the tallness of the building and with the small residential area, that's the issue of zoning, as you mentioned. And a building like this are going to be going up in a lot of areas in the central city where there are only one or two story buildings.
Yeah.
And that's when the zoning was being changed, that's when folks needed to really tune in, but it's totally out of our hands now. So
thank you for reaffirming that, Zeri.
I have one quick question for Ralph. Is any of the MPP going to be exposed? Because type 4B does allow you to expose some of the mass timber, but not all of it. And I'm super interested because I've worked with it before, and it would be great if some of the mass timber was exposed, especially in an affordable housing development and small studios. It could look really cool. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
It would be really cool. You know, the way that we're constructing this, it, you know, unfortunately is not going to be working that way. We have a ceiling that's a 3-inch mass plywood.
Yeah.
And then our floor is a 2-inch mass plywood. On the ceiling, then we got to apply 5/8-inch gyp and then a 1/2-inch resilient channel and another layer of 5/8-inch gyp. And then on top, on the 2-inch, we got to put a, you know, inch and a, about an inch of gypcrete. So it all gets covered up.
You can't expose it as the ceiling. I understand you wouldn't do it as the floor, but not even in the ceiling, huh?
I don't know. You know, we haven't found an assembly yet, but, you know, I don't know. We're probably going to be having some other things tested anyway, so
yeah.
We might be able to find that out. We're working with some, you know, very good codes people that are, you know, way better than I am. So hopefully they can come up with an answer. I'd love to do it.
Well, I look forward to seeing it. It can be really cool.
Thank you.
Tanya, we should check in with you. Have we covered everything that you hoped we would cover?
Yes, you guys did a great job. Thank you. We didn't talk about venting, but I think my only point was they should consider it early, and I'm sure you all agree. So.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, it's incredibly sensitive on a building that is this tall in this location. It will be very visible. Yeah.
And out there.
And it should be part of the overall composition of the facade also.
Yeah.
Agreed on.
Considered. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Right. Okay. So thank you very much for coming in for a design advice request. Great conversation. Thank you to all
Thanks
of the neighbors and community members who came to provide public comment. We are going to take a short break. It's 12 minutes after 3. We're going to take a 10-minute break. And
Ryan,
then we will return for our next DAR.
Okay. Good job, you guys. Ralph, good to see you, by the way.
Good to see you, Jim.
All right. Good job on the project. Look forward to seeing you in the Type 2. You got to listen to Tanya.
Yeah, we will.
All right. You don't want to come back to the commission.
I want you to, though. I want to see the evolution of the building, dang it.
Oh. I'll have to deny it then.
Oh, there it is.
No, you don't.
You can just see it after it's approved.
Yeah.
All right, take care.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.